Hello, listeners. This is Paula Scataloni. Transformative Harmonics is an academy for individual and planetary healing rooted in ancient wisdom and modern science. We are here for those who are interested in being guided back to soul so they can step into their signature frequency and be in service of humanity. If you've been looking for a place to land and settle down, develop community, and dive into the psyche and soma in a way that is supportive, trauma-informed, and integrative, then our programs are here for you now. Our monthly membership circle is available for those looking for a one or twice a month option for themselves and supported by my writings and somatic practices and sound journeys through Substack. Our immersive program is a deep dive into your own, your ancestral, and the collective, so you can go through your own initiation and transformation into your signature frequency with a small, intimate cohort. These groups are closed, and they only open every other month. So please reach out to me if you're interested in one of our upcoming groups. If any of these programs feel like they resonate with you, go to my website, paulascataloni.com, and fill out an application or sign up for a discovery call. I'm happy to meet with you and give you more information to help you make your decision. We would love to meet you and bring your wisdom into the circle.
Welcome. I'm your host, Paula Scataloni, the founder of Transformative Harmonics, a podcast that offers listeners a synthesis of ancient wisdom and modern science.
Hello and welcome back to Transformative Harmonics. I am your host, Paula Scataloni. Today, I'm thrilled to share the work of Sandy Broadhurst. Sandy is someone that I had found on a different podcast, and in hearing about her work and her exquisite way of bringing beauty back into the world, I felt the urge to bring her on the podcast, to purchase her cards, to explore this path of love that she was inviting us into. And I will say from my own experience of using the cards, they're pretty magical. And I feel like timing of this is perfect for our community because we've been talking about love, authenticity, frequency, and I feel like Sandy really brings it all together into something that's very practical and that taps in to things that are already present in our lives around us and brings us into a deeper connection with those things that are part of the living world and connect us back to that line and understanding of what it means to be on the path of the rose. Sandy Broadhurst is a founder and a creator of the Mandalas of Love. Sandy weaves vibrational healing through the sacred geometry of roses. Her transmissions form luminous energy mandalas and soul-charged portals that help to reveal, alchemize, and release ancestral imprints, emotional residue, and energetic fragmentation within the hearts, homes, and deep memory fields of Mother Earth. For over four decades, Sandy has shared her creative and healing path through design, well-being, and metaphysics. Her devotions rooted in the awakening of the divine feminine and the return to beauty as a sacred medicine on a path to heal and find inner peace. Her work is an invitation to open the heart, to remember the truth of who we are, and to return home to love. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Welcome to another episode of Transformative Harmonics. I'm Paula Scataloni, your host. And before we begin today, as always, I would like us to slow down for a moment, whether you're driving or sitting at home, and just take a moment to orient to the space around you. Begin to answer that question, how do I know I'm here and not someplace else? And maybe even find your breath. These simple steps allow us to create space so that we can ingest and take in the gems of what this discussion is going to bring today, I hope. And as always, with that metaphor, I invite you to take a bite, digest, let it settle and find a home, and come back for more
because this really is a buffet, this podcast. I know that we cover a lot of topics. Today, I'm particularly excited to sit with my guest because this is a topic I've been skirting around and following and trying to make sense of. And I feel in listening to Sandy speak, there's a lot of clicking and aha moments that I'm having, and I hope you have it as well. So, Sandy, it is such a pleasure to sit with you today. So I'm excited for what we're going to talk about.
Thank you, Paula. Me too.
So I would like to share that in my journey, I have not ventured into the rose as a sentient force, as a deeper understanding of how everything fits together, which is the beauty of all of this, right? All of the pieces. And so I feel like your piece in particular is helping me to understand the journey that many of us are on. And so I'm going to start with a question that will probably encompass your journey as well, is to start with sharing a little about your journey with Rose and helping us to understand our connection and the importance of it, because it's more than one would think, and there is a lot to this.
This is true. I mean, my journey with the rose started from a small child. My grandmother was Rosa Kate. My sister was Rosemary. So I was surrounded by roses. And my grandfather was a professional gardener. And they had a little cottage in the middle of the New Forest in Hampshire in the UK. And he had a rose garden in front of the cottage. And it just always used to fascinate me because we could run as children around the rest of his garden. And he was like an artist with colour, you know, in creating these amazing palettes of colour in the garden. But the rose garden, well, and probably because he didn't want young children getting caught on thorns, but, you know, we weren't invited to go on the rose garden. And also the cottage lived on an unmade up road, you know, a rough track road right in the depth of the forest. And I noticed that he always used to keep his eye open for opportunist manure, because the forest animals, and New Forest is really unique because the animals are owned, but they have a license. They have commoners' rights with cottages that can go out in the forest. And he used to, you know, be out there to try and get the manure for his roses. And there was something, I think, even in those early days, that I thought, oh, this is really interesting, because, you know, you're putting the manure from the animals onto these roses, and they're creating fragrance and beauty and blossom. So there was something about the rose that even struck me then, that it was an alchemical plant that transformed denser material into these beautiful flowers. But my journey through all of that then took me on to be a couture wedding dress designer for 20 years. And it wasn't a planned path. I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to paint and photograph. And in default, my mother sewed, and I grew up with it. By age 11, I could make a tailored suit. And, you know, that was my default pattern, right? So I ended up making wedding frocks of silk and antique French textile. And the women all wanted roses on their dresses. This was the 80s and 90s. I mean, I'm sure I've got a past life at the French court, because it was of that time where it's, you know, it was big dresses. It was Lady Di, you know, sort of Lady Diana sort of thing, big skirts, headdresses. So, as I say, we specialised in silk and antique French textile. I ended up with two shops, and one was a design studio, one was the main shop. One of them was in Winchester in the UK, and one was in Romsey, a little market town. And we made exquisite dresses. And I even manifested myself a manageress in the shop called Rosemary, you know. But we made thousands and thousands of bias cut silk gathered roses to go on these dresses. And we were very good at what we did. You know, we were in Hello Magazine and all the main publications, and at periods at different times, we were in all the newspapers. So we made top end and very unusual dresses and a lot of colour. In 20 years, I probably made 5 white dresses. Everything I was looking at, what was going to subtly increase the radiance of this woman, and that, you know, she just had presence on her day. And it was sometimes it was the subtlest of colour into the fabric that changed her. You know, so I learned a lot in those 20 years about women and their stories. You know, how women felt about their bodies. How, when I came to design a wedding dress for a client and sit down and sketch from my collection, and she often bring her mother with her. And it's like, whose dress is it? Whose day is it? Who, mum would be determining what was going on when actually the girl could have might have chosen a different dress. And who was the favoured child? If I was making, you know, bridesmaids' dresses, and then I'd go to see them on the wedding day and dress them all. So I got to see the home she grew up in. So I got this whole picture of the framework of how women feel about themselves, and in also what was the attractor factor? What was the spectrum of vibration that this woman carried that had attracted her to the partner? And I saw that the heart field held, you know, the conscious and unconscious patterning. That was actually the calling card. And I mean, I wasn't new to energy. My wedding dress shop was open from 92 to 2000. And in 93, I'd started with Reiki. I'd gone on and trained in Sekhem, an Egyptian healing energy, metamorphic technique, crystals, numerology. You know, I was like a kid in a candy store. Oh, that looks interesting. Oh, I think I'll go and explore that. So all of that came into the dresses. And I ended up making wedding dresses that I worked with numerology. And I took the birth dates of the bride and groom, what their gifts were, what the exchange was in the relationship, and then couched gold and silver threads for the masculine and feminine on the heart chakra, doused for the semi-precious stones that needed to be stitched onto these threads that had formed themselves on the bodice, and cleansed and energized them for the couple, for the bride predominantly, so that she, when she put on the dress, she just sort of went into a still zone. So they were really sort of sacred. It had moved from really creative design into something that was more of a sacred ceremonial piece. And I can remember Condé Nast magazine saying to me, you know, you're 10 years ahead of your time. And, you know,
more than 10.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, it was just like it was the magic zone. I was just getting the guidance as to what I was going to, you know, what I needed to do next and how this was to take place. So they got the semi-precious stones would be stitched up in the numerological sequence, and the dresses came with booklets that said, you know, what the exchange was and so on. And then, you know, I don't know, I got to the end of that journey and I just knew I wasn't going to make wedding dresses forever. It was, I don't know, there's something else. There is something else here. And the last shop that I moved into, we hadn't long been there, and I had a team in the workroom. So it was an 1860s building with a basement. The ground floor had my collection. Top floor had my team in the workroom, and that varied from 4 to 6 women that were talented seamstresses that were being, you know, were putting these designs together for me. And yeah, we hadn't long been there, and nobody wanted to go in the basement because that's when the fabrics were. And they'd wait until I was in the shop and they'd go, Sandy, do you think you could just pop down and pick up so-and-so's fabric? And that was a whole educational piece about the energy of spaces. And that was my first experience of connecting with an earthbound spirit. And that was the way shower that started me to think there's another path opening up for me. And I'd also started doing some one-to-one sessions, healing sessions for people. I mean, obviously all the wedding dresses and the women that came in, all, you know, they'd say, I don't know why I feel so much better after coming for my fitting, you know.
Yes.
And of course I made toiles and calico, you know, we were couture designers. And so I was right on the energy field, right touching the body. And you think, now you think, well, what a privilege that was, because actually we don't even like people getting too close to us in the line in the bank.
Yes.
You know, back off, you know, you're too close. But, you know, I was working really right in on the body.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And people would say, I can't wait for my next fitting. You know, of course, they've got a little blast of Reiki. And also, of course, what happened was that my team in the workroom, you know, on a Monday morning, there would have to be a debrief as to what had happened to everybody over the weekend. So I was like Mother Hen, counselling, healing, designing.
Little did you know.
Little did I know. No.
Yeah.
So I started doing the one-to-one sessions.
Okay.
And then got into the question of why do some people heal and some people don't?
Great. That was the question I was going to ask you, because I've heard you mention that before.
Yeah,
that's a great question. What did you determine?
Well, I looked. So for some people that came, we would take them exponentially, or I, you know, my team would take them exponentially forward, because I just saw myself as a facilitator of the technology. Hollow bone, I think, is the word most used now. It's like, well, the common denominator is the place they came out of in the morning. You know, if you come back and we exponentially move forward, that's one thing. But I was getting people coming back and it was Groundhog Day. You know, you do the session and they'd make the same shifts. But so what was it when they went home? So was it a sick building or was it a toxic relationship? So that's where my inquiry started to go, and I became more and more fascinated by space. And because of the experience that I'd had in my shop, you know, and I mean, my team didn't want to stay on this premises unless I was there. And I had two tiny children at that time, you know, which was pretty inconvenient, you know. So I was beginning to understand the impact that space has on us. And also, when we look at the attractor factor of relationship, I began to see that the homes that we buy are also a relationship.
Yes, yes.
And as a child, my father, we moved a lot. And my father had a phrase, if you like, where he would buy what he called a pigsty in a row of palaces. So he would buy a place that needed, a doer-upper, right?
Yes.
He would buy a doer-upper, do it up, and then we'd have to move. And so even early doors, I got to experience quite a number of interesting properties as a child. I mean, you know.
With histories. Yes. Yeah. So this drew you into understanding space and your relationship to space, which then started to, is that when the traveling began? Because you started to be called to spaces or pay attention?
Yeah, absolutely. What happened as the wedding dress time, the 20 years, came to a close, it was also synchronistic to the end of my marriage. there clearly there was something about the whole understanding of that I was getting of relationship and realizing what the situation was with my relationship. And so that those two parts of my life coming into a closing point took me out. I went off to KLC, the design school in London, and I did an intensive training there to learn the mechanics of space and designing for space, layout and the energetics that were really taking me forward. And that took me, it just took me out on a different trajectory. I had come across Master Choa Kok Sui, who was a pranic healing master. And I had gone off to Vancouver Island without knowing another pranic healer on the planet. But I knew that I recognized his energy and I could see the violet aura around him. And I knew I had to go find him. And that took me into another experience of learning about energy and working with color, prana, with energy. So this has been an incremental process of developing a refinement and an insight as to the influencing factors on our lives. And I can remember somebody saying years ago, there was a book that came out, was about this being the only planet of choice. And there was a real realization, in fact, that we're not on a planet of choice, because our patterns, and usually the patterns that we take on in the first 5 to 7 years of life, are the underlying drivers of the choice points that we face on our journey. And, you know, certainly my journey was no different to that. And I also think that anybody that's drawn to the rose hasn't necessarily had an easy journey either. So there is something here about the unfolding of the feminine, the voice of the feminine. Certainly why what I've realized for me, this whole journey for me is about finding my voice and finding my power.
Yes.
Because of, you know, the patterning I experienced in my childhood. So I think I was exploring relationship through making the wedding dresses. Because my question to everybody was, well, how did you meet your beloved? How did you meet this amazing person you're going to journey with? Everybody had a story. You know, it was happenstance, or a friend had asked, or they hadn't expected to be there, or everybody had a story. Right? So I feel that, somebody did say to me it was researching the human dream, but that period of my life brought me a wisdom and an insight of the feminine story and the path of empowerment of the feminine and the sacredness of relationship too, or the impact of relationship on our soul's evolution. So when we look at the inner temple, which is what that one's all about, and how, you know, the dress and everything else. When we take it out to the space that we live in, it's like the outer temple. This is the next piece of our expression. It's the next piece of our experience. You know, do I feel at home where I live? Do I feel home here? Do I feel at home where I live? And so whatever we might have going on in here that is an ongoing story, when I started to look at people's houses, the story was out pictured in the house too.
Yes,
the mirror. And what we choose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Beautiful.
So that it was a natural piece of my own experience of this journey here. This, you know, this earth, the life of the earthling, you know, what the soul calls forward. Yeah, and it's all relationship. It's all, you know, our partners are relationships, but our houses are relationships too.
Yes.
So that evolutionary process, took me to developing more skill, a different skill set in the healing arts of reading the energy of a space and developing tools, developing ways in which I could calibrate space and be able to change the energy and to release negative energy within a space. And I have found over the years now, so, you know, we're talking 25 years of doing this. Well, actually, it was nearly 30. If you go back to when I released this spirit in the basement of my wedding dress shop, that's become more my mastery. I've become quite adept at spirit communication and release, and the understanding that the heart holds all the stories. This is where the trauma sits, in the heart. And all of the earthbound spirits that I have released through the processes that I've been gifted have all had trauma in the heart field.
Yes.
And that wound pattern was strong enough for the soul not to cleanly release at that last breath. And so from, you know, seeing the dynamics in relationship and seeing how our lives evolve through our journey, do we heal these original patterns that can often be set right back in early childhood, or do we hold on to them? And we really are being asked, as Anubis in the Egyptian pantheon speaks of, we should have hearts as light as feathers through our journey. And my process evolved through this last 20, 25 years to a very refined vision of how we come home to ourselves. How do we truly come home to ourselves? And coming home to our spaces is one way of understanding what's at play. What are we experiencing?
Yes.
So the journey just sort of incrementally took me deeper and deeper into understanding energy on all sorts of levels. You know, I trained in energetic feng shui, worked with color, worked with sound, and found all of these different tools that were going to assist me in bringing balance and harmony in spaces. And it was through that journey that I ended up at the Alhambra in Granada, yes, in Spain, at Rose time at the end of April in 2010. And the Alhambra had been on my wish list, on my wall. There were only two places, to be fair, on my wish list. One was the Alhambra, and I couldn't explain why. I didn't know why. And the other was Rosslyn Chapel in Scotland. And I didn't know at the time they both had a connection with the rose. They were just what dropped in. And I just knew that one day I would go visit. And I had the opportunity to go to the Alhambra with my then partner and have, you know, 2 full days in the Alhambra. And I've noticed in my journey that there are certain pulse points when there is shift. And the Alhambra was one of those. I can remember taking a step through the archway into the main general life gardens there and feeling like I'd come home. There was a familiarity with the energy and the beauty that was there. And before I'd even got as far as the Nazareth Palace, I spotted a dark clipped hedge with roses dancing on the top of it, multicolored roses. And I'm like, oh no, I need to go in here. And I'd gone with my favorite camera. I'd always loved taking photographs. And the roses started speaking. And the gardens in the Alhambra are like magical rooms with rose beds and fountains and waterways. And you walk through an archway and then there's another delight with a fountain. And the roses were saying, photograph me, don't miss me. I'm over here. Come and photograph me. And so, I was like, just wow. And those 2 days passed in a haze. I mean, that the Alhambra itself and the rhythmical script, the Arabic script, and the proportions of the rooms, you know, all of those things had already started to come into my field of delight, if you like, because I'd begun to understand the geometry of our spaces and how these different spaces are set up for how we feel and the impact of the energy. It's like the Lion Court is slightly trapezoid. It's holding mystery, but it's got the 12 lions, you know, which is, it's all symbolic, you know, and the four streams from the fountain, the four directions. It just, yes, it's calling me back, as you can tell. But I also realized my connection to a Sufi mystic called Ibn Arabi, who spent the first half of his life in Andalusia. And I also had come to understand that the Alhambra was on a Venus temple. It had a connection to the planet Venus. Not the goddess Venus. And yeah, it was just remarkable. So I came home with all of these photographs and loaded them on my computer. And a couple of days later, woke up with this voice in my head that said, we'd like you to put 11 of us together and work with us. And this one behind me is one of them. So I've printed them onto silk and stretched them on canvas. But this was one of the ones from the Alhambra. But as I gathered them together, they instructed me to sit and meditate with each one. And then they showed me where they worked, how they worked together, and how they worked as a grid, a chakra grid on the body to heal and balance the body. So that took me out on a whole new way of understanding the roses from all of the thousands and thousands of roses that we put on these dresses for these women. And my grandmother, who was part of my soul group and made sense of a very dysfunctional family that I've birthed into, and my sister Rosemary. So this thread of the rose and her connection to the divine feminine. And it was just like a mystery that was developing, like blossoming like the rose. And I sat there, you know, after hearing these words, and, you know, normally it's where's the coffee? But no, this was, you know, we'd like you to put 11 of us together and work with us. And I'm like, well, who are you? Who am I speaking to? And they said, you know, we are the Sisterhood of the Rose. We sit alongside the White Light Brotherhood. There is a Brotherhood of the Rose, and you will know many of those that are part of this. And your guide for this work will be the Ascended Master Lady Nada, who I've come to understand is very connected to Venus and is also the overlighting soul of Mary Magdalene. So, you know, then it was just like, well, you know, but this is amazing, right? And so unexpected. And they instructed me to start laying the cards on my body. So they instructed me to print them like photographs and then lay these cards up on my body every night. It was just lay down every night and put these photographs on these chakra points. And you know, the information was really super clear about where they needed to go. And I was instructed to do that until I had been able to memorize the frequency, the code in each of these roses, and place them on the chakras. Sometimes I'd only get as far as the solar plexus and I'd be completely gone. Other times I'd do it two or three times. And as soon as I got to that point, they said, okay, now you can set us up. We're a workshop. We're a class, right? And I put the class out and I had 11 amazing women show up. So I had 11 roses and I had 11 women turn up, which was just magical for this Way of the Rose class. They said that they were called the Way of the Rose.
Hello, this is Paula Scatoloni. Thank you for listening to the Transformative Harmonics podcast. If this conversation has been interesting to you, I invite you to look at our new Transformative Harmonics Academy. I was inspired to create this membership and academy to bring together not only the transformative power of sound, but also a growing global community of faculty and teachers who are coming together to support you on your journey. So together, you will come and meet myself, others who are interested in spiritual growth, embodiment, soulful connection, opening their gifts, and we will gather weekly to explore, embody, and find our signature frequency. If this is interesting to you, feel free to check out the website or make a discovery call with me at paulascatoloni.com. And now back to the podcast.
Incredible.
And that's how it started.
Such a beautiful story of the soul, your soul leading you to your purpose, to why you're here.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
It's like threads. It's like it's interesting because the last wedding dress collection with the gold and silver threads and the crystals was actually called the Threads of Life. And I've begun to realize that we are sacred weavers, right? We weave our way from our childhood and our childhood stories, and they get woven into whatever it is that our soul is called to step forward to experience. And there are points in our lives when there's a convergence, when things start to make sense. So for me, never having completed my degree course in fine art and photography, here I was with my photographs, you know, producing something that was weaving the healing arts, with for purpose, and incrementally from 2010. In 2010, I started teaching them in London, and I had the opportunity to teach them in New Jersey and New York. So, you know, I was taking them twice a year over to the States and, you know, teaching at the Theosophical Society in New York and the Open Center and the Meta Center, all of these, magical places. And just seeing how the women were responding to the rose. How were they responding to this message? The roses are just pure love. They've got no other agenda. That's how I experience them. And each one of these roses has got like a coded message. So they open us to inquiry. They keep us curious. And again, we come back to a relationship. What's my relationship to this rose? Or what's my relationship to what this rose is inviting me to explore? Because from 2010, I had 11 roses. 2011, they sent me off to Rosslyn Chapel in Scotland to pick up three master roses. the divine feminine, the divine masculine, and the golden flame. And they sit on the crown, these three roses, on the left and right-hand hemispheres of the brain. So asking us to bring balance to these qualities within ourselves of logic and discernment and our creativity and our intuition, opening us out to these different aspects of self to bring something more. Because when we bring that masculine and feminine together, there's a third energy that's birthed. It's like if you've got two overlapping circles and you've got the vesica, this area that overlaps between the two, there is the potential to birth the divine child. From a Christic tradition, the divine child. And that for me is that pure, innocent connection to source. You know, we need masculine and feminine in balance to birth anything, whether that's a baby or a business or a creative project. We need both aspects of ourselves. We need the receptivity and the in-breath and the out-breath. You know, there is this...
Yes.
Harmony that comes, that births something else. And so I had the masculine, feminine, and the divine, the divine flame, the sacred flame that starts this sort of illumination of the verticality, if you like. And then they incrementally added again, through 2.12, 2.13, and in 2.14, by 2.14, I had five levels of the work. What came after the master roses were a set of 11 roses that called themselves the Rose Angels, who are the transformers of the five wounds to love, of abandonment, betrayal, denial, judgment, and separation that sit in the chakras, where we hold our stories. And what the roses said when they first came through was that each and every one of us as women in incarnating at this time had at least one of those five wounds to love, to alchemize, that we'd either brought in through our soul story or we'd embedded through from the ancestral line, through our mothers. Because 70% of our emotional storyline comes over the placenta. So we absorb even in utero.
Yes.
We know whether we're going to be safe and loved. We know what it is that our mothers are experiencing. And you know, we feel it right from the get-go.
That was a big overlap when I've heard you speak of this. In my journey, I've been tracking through the gene keys. I don't know if you know the gene keys, the six core wounds of humanity. And I went and I put them all next to each other because I've been given music for 7 years that take people through an unwinding of the core wounds through song. The Beatles, usually, which is interesting, being from the UK. But the ways in which the rose speaks to us of how to support the unwinding and coming back to these core wounds as the that hold. And it really is it's like a yarn, a ball of yarn, that if we start to unwind it, there's a huge expansion that starts to happen in our energy, because so much is bound,
yes,
around those wounds.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What I found with the roses, what I've come to understand is that when I birthed this set, they were birthed in woundology. They were birthed with that languaging of these five wounds to love. But in fact, what the roses have brought is a salve. So although they're illuminating the location in the body where these core wounds can get caught and where they are in the body, help us as facilitators to help guide others to where they can track out or where they can question, you know, like, for instance, in the base chakra, base second chakra, for me, that holds the wound of abandonment. And the self is self-love, self-value, self-esteem. I am worthy. I am enough. And that is the absolute fundamental. It's like the base of Maslow's triangle. If we have not got that in place, it is very difficult to unwind anything else on that verticality. And for most of us as women, this is a big piece, because it's not only where we might have experienced being abandoned within those early years, but it's also where we can abandon another. And it's also, more than anything else, it's where we can abandon ourselves.
Yes.
And if you're looking at all of the places where, even if you're looking at, you know, having a divine download as to what you need to be doing, if there is something in that base that is absolutely not sound, we can abandon that path, as you know, we can abandon ourselves within it. We pull our root up. A number of people I've worked with chronic fatigue, and I did train as a Samaritan as well. So those that, you know, are struggling to stay embodied, scan the base chakra. There's nothing there. It's really interesting. And I think, you know, I did mention that I had gone off to meet Master Choa Kok Sui. So I went on to train in pranic healing, pranic psychotherapy, pranic feng shui, and that true energetic shift feng shui of our spaces. But, you know, that also gave me the skills to scan chakras and actually the energy anatomy of the Rose Oracle and that first set that sits in the chakra points. The energy anatomy is foundated on the work that I did with Reiki, with Sikkim, but mostly with pranic healing, because I found it such a powerful energetic modality, although very left-brained. So weaving the roses with it brought something else in completely. And actually, I was doing one-to-one sessions for people with the roses and pranic healing at one point, combining the two. And it was just so powerful in the way that the roses and their real sort of feminine energy wove with the structure. Pranic healing has a lot of structure to it. So it was, you know, it was a magical exploration, really, of the power of the roses. I mean, I'm slightly biased, but
well, I feel like you're speaking to the sacred geometry of the rose and its original blueprint, and that when we have that original frequency, I call it your signature frequency, but each chakra, each energy center. And then people don't all understand that we have more than the seven. And you speak to that in your different decks as well, right? The
absolutely.
Cosmic, the upper chakras.
Yes. I think also the other thing that really fascinated me when I started sharing this work, you know, in 2014, I had the first edition of the Oracle printed. And the more I got to share the work, the more my openness to the curiosity of what was going on here was blossoming too. And I started dowsing the energy centers up through the body before I put the rose cards on the body for the client, and checking the orientation of the spin, because obviously the chakra points are the crossing points of the streams, the currents of energy that move up through the body, the Ida and the Pingala, the masculine, feminine currents, and they cross over at the chakra points. So I started dowsing the chakras and seeing what the orientation of preference was, whether it was an anti-clockwise spin, a yin feminine spin or a clockwise spin. So I would go up through the body and chart, you know, what the body was showing me as part of the balancing. And I'd put the roses up on the body, the cards themselves up on the body, and then I would douse again. And the pendulum would spin a bit anti-clockwise and spin a bit clockwise, anti-clockwise, clockwise. And what it was doing was the rose was entraining the chakra into its perfected geometry, bringing it, because the sacred geometry of the rose is golden mean. It's pentagram, it's golden mean. So what it's doing, and the body is golden mean. All of the proportions of our body are golden mean. This ratio of 1 to 1.61803. And it's known as the beauty proportion. And it is exactly the same as this dance of Venus in the heavens. Venus in the heavens. Have I got a Venus grid? No, I might have taken that. But Venus does this dance in the heavens over 8 years of this, the creating this Rosabella.
Oh, yes.
The Rose of Venus.
Yes.
And she takes 1.618 years to get from point to point. So and the rose, she opens her five sepals around her bud, not consecutively, not pow. She opens them in the same way that you would draw a five-pointed star. Right? And then her blossom explodes from that. But so the underlying geometry is golden mean. This is pentagram. And the ratio embedded in the pentagram is golden mean. So this ratio, which we recognize as beauty, we, you know, at some level within us, it's why the great artists like Leonardo incorporated this golden mean ratio in the paintings. Because at a cellular level in the body, we could relate to the paintings. It's like, so there is this beautiful weave of as above, so below. And it is said that the rose was a gift from Venus, that it was brought with the earliest star seeds from Venus many, many years ago. And the earliest fossilized remains of the rose on the planet are over 30 million years old. So the rose has been embedded in our energy here on the earth. So if the rose holds this beautiful golden ratio and Venus holds this golden ratio while she's creating this Rosabella in the heavens, I went off to south of France to do some training with a physicist called Dan Winter in 2006, I think it was. And he had something called a bliss tuner that he had created on his computer program, which he strapped you up on the wrist to his computer. And then you went into a meditation and the dials on his computer told you when you would hit the zone. And the zone was golden mean, was the ratio of 1 to 1.61803. And so what Dan was saying is the ratio of the heart in love is golden mean, which is the ratio of the rose, and it's the ratio of Venus. So we can see why Venus is seen as the planet of love. The rose is given as a gift of love. And why rose oil on the heart? You know, or why we use hawthorn, for instance. Hawthorn is part of the rose family. Creticus. We use it as a salve, a balm for the heart. So there is just this beautiful magic. And I think the connection with the rose, and she's linked with Mother Mary and Mary Magdalene, and this evolving awareness of the divine feminine is all part of this picture of this evolving point that we're in. in a much greater cycle of this return of the qualities that the divine feminine, the sacred feminine, or the empowered feminine holds, of compassion, of kindness, of more of a we than an I. You know, this is why we're here right now. This is why I believe that the Dalai Lama said that the world would be saved by Western woman. It's because it is for us to rise and speak of that truth, and the to bring balance back to our humanity.
Yes, I agree. To do our inner healing so that we can do that.
Yeah. Well, this was one of the things that they said when they first came through. They said that each one of us, as women, had come in with one of those wounds to love, to alchemize. But they also said that, you know, it was important for women to do the work that they, to heal the stories that they have around the masculine. How many are holding priestess wounds and stories from the past of not ending too well when we put our heads above the parapet. And that many were holding anger. And what they said was that this was 2:10, right? And they said, you know, that in the coming years, it was for us as women to pay attention, to heal our relationship with the masculine. And it's, you know, our relationship with our inner masculine as well. But they said that we needed to go beyond the drama dancers and the passive aggressive behaviors in order to get our needs met. It was for us to do our inner work and then be able to hold the wounded masculine to his heart. Because they said that's where the wound is.
In the heart.
And it's, you know, it's so interesting starting to see the Brothers of the Rose emerging. You know, there are several I have seen within the New Age, not New Age, but in the evolving consciousness community. Yes. Where there are men who are obviously much more connected to their inner feminine and their heart, which makes them super powerful and, you know, super attractive for us as women, because we can see that they've done, many of them, some of them, questionable, but, you know, many of them have done the work that enables us to feel safe and to feel treasured. Because I believe that it is for us to feel safe and treasured by the masculine, which enables us to open up at a completely different level. You know, particularly in that sacral chakra, right? But it is because our warrior heart energy has got somewhere to land.
Yes.
Because, you know, the masculine wants to embed in the feminine, wants to, and it doesn't, I mean, we're not talking about, there's no difference in whether it's a same-sex relationship or a heterosexual relationship. One will always hold one more quality, slightly different quality than the other. So the masculine wants to embed in the feminine. And our warrior hearts have got to be held safe. You know, for us to blossom as roses, you know, there has to be that sense of safety for us to really open and to drop those last levels of guardedness that we've learned over the eons of our safety.
Reestablishing trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that true intimacy.
Yeah.
With ourselves, with the earth, with others can occur.
And I can see the evolutionary path that women have been on, because certainly for here in the UK, in the sort of 80s and 90s, we had Margaret Thatcher here as our Prime Minister, who wore a skirt and carried a handbag, but was working with an iron fist. Yes. And there was not much yin going on in there, right? And women were wearing sort of Armani trouser suits, and I can have as much sex as you, I can drink as much as you, and I can get as far as you in the boardroom.
Yes.
But we lost the goddess. We lost the feminine in our attempt to speak the same language coming from here, not the heart. And that's what I see is the journey that we've been on since the beginning of the 90s. And if I look at the Venus cycles from, say, 2004 to 2012, that was an activation. Every one of those petals of the Rosabella was another activation and an awakening for the feminine. And from 2012 to 2020, an integration of what we were, could we embody this? Could we hold this? Could we embody it? And then it's really been about being able to live it, I feel, since 2020 in this cycle. Can we fully embody a balanced masculine feminine within us, which enables this divine child, this pure, innocent portal of connection to source, to be our guiding light? Can we become lighthouses, basically, on solid ground, illuminated from within, and that can shine a light for on our next steps and shine a light of safe passage for others in a storm? And that's where the magic is. And the rose is such a balm for the heart.
That's just beautiful. Just beautiful. I feel like there's such an invitation for us to also redefine our relationship with God or Source or that which we are in that as well. That is so many people at this time because of what's happening in the world, and it's just unreal at so many levels. They're called to have more meaning in the larger picture. And this is all culminating and happening, you know, for us. And so I have such a good, I feel after this conversation, a sense of where the rose, why the rose is part of this conversation and needs to be part of this conversation as well.
And yes. I think, you know, just recently, I mean, I've been very inspired by the monks that have been doing the Walk for Peace.
Yes.
And that has linked me back into, again, these threads in my life, linked me back to my time training in Arhatic yoga, which was very much based in Buddhist principles, and also 3 years at a philosophy school in the beginning of the 90s. And this thread that, you know, the first time that I set eyes on Venerable Bhikkhu Panikkara, who is the lead monk, who was the visionary who put this Walk for Peace together, I recognized his Christ light and the rose heart, because he holds both, as well as, you know, that Buddha embodiment. And actually, as we're speaking today, there is a whole delegation of them that have gone to the United Nations in New York. There is a shift that's going on, and we can feel it. Those of us that are sensitive, we can see the chaos. But actually, underneath this, there is something really amazing that is developing. And you know, a pathway where this sense of the verticality and the divine connection to the divine. And I think that's really where that second, because I've got two sets, the Rose Oracle and I've got the Rose Dragons. And the rose dragons have come in really to expand that connection deep into the earth so that we are connected to the elements, the elemental aspects of ourselves. You know, the Magdalene says, you know, we are here to be 100% physical and 100% spiritual, but that we need to be fully embodied. I spent most of my life trying to get out of my body. I really didn't want to be here.
Yes.
The trauma from my childhood meant that, you know, I had a master's degree in people pleasing, right? And actually, many of us came in as sensitives. And that's made this a really tricky number. You know?
Yes. I give the metaphor that in that decision point of moving from source to form, we started the entrance and then said, what did I sign up for? And then tried to go back.
Exactly.
And that's what we've done.
Where was the small print here?
Yes. Yeah.
And I absolutely know that at some level, as I was birthing, I wanted to go back in again. It was just like, I know I'm not going to be safe. I know I'm not going to be held. I know that I've come into a really dysfunctional family. Take me home.
Yes. And the amount of people, when we say that to people, they know what we mean. It really hits home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But this vessel is of the earth, right? Mm-hmm. Every molecule of this vessel is of the earth. And at the more we can connect with nature, golden mean, the more we can connect with, well, for me, rose medicine. So, you know, this is what my sense the rose is for us. It's a balm for the heart. And the elemental rose dragons really are, you know, inviting us into a deeper connection with the elemental nature of ourselves and the earth. For me, I take myself off to the shore. I'm very blessed where I live. I'm sort of 10 minutes away from the shore. And I can stand on the shore and connect with the earth. Look out across the water, feel the wind on my face. And if we're very lucky here in the UK, the sun is shining. I can connect with the solar power and the fire. And the rose calls us into embodiment. If we look at the Rosicrucian teachings, what is that? That's the verticality. That's about being a bridge. That's about bringing heaven on earth, which is what the roses are about. And this cross of incarnation, this cross of being able to stabilize and open ourselves out to being here in incarnation, what does that do? That, as we come into peace, when we find peace within, the rose of the heart will open. And that, that's where the magic is. Because we're able to be here and be fully present to all that's unfolding.
With an open heart. Yeah. Hmm? With an open heart.
Open heart, yeah.
With an open heart.
You know, it is. I was reflecting just recently when I published the first edition of the Rose Oracle. I was invited 2 years running to speak to a group in the United Nations on the rose and the path of peace.
Mm.
And there is something here that is emerging again, you know, in parallel to what Venerable Bhikkhu Penikara is doing with the Walk for Peace movement and the blossoming of the rose and if you're looking at the Buddhist teachings and the connection to Kuan Yin is with the lotus, right?
Yeah.
And the lotus and the rose are east and west.
Yes.
And they are bringing us back to the same thing, the compassionate heart, the heart that cares, the heart that it sees suffering. And I really believe that energy, that movement into this new earth or to be homoluminous, as Heather Ainsworth says. You know, this path, you know, it requires us to be fully present to what is still sitting within us, within our hearts, that needs healing, that needs that soothing balm, needs to be witnessed, and needs to be asked for us to be fully present too, with compassion, kindness,
and space, and for unfolding.
Yeah.
For us to unfold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's so, so beautiful, so powerful. I have just loved every moment of listening to you speak about this and being on this journey.
It's, you know, it is just a continual magical unfolding. I mean, I've just followed the path. I've just, you know, wherever it's wanted me to go. You know, it took me off to Somerset to bring through the Rose Dragons. But, it, you know, ultimately it's all about coherence in the field. And I've really noticed that our nervous systems are, you know, hammered by what's going on out here.
Yes.
What we're seeing that we're horrified at seeing man's inhumanity to man and how it's still playing out.
So more and more. Yeah, we need coherence more and more.
Yes.
Because that's going to continue to happen.
Yes.
And so we need to find those ways to bring that.
Yeah.
And so as we think about that, what are the ways that people can reach you or your medicine to work on this coherence and to show up in the ways that we're inviting them to?
Well, you know, I offer a series of consultation options. There's on my website, mandalasoflove.com, there's a series of options, and I work directly with clients doing inner mandalas and a clearing and activation process for the heart and for the cellular structure of the body, healing. And I work with people in their homes, and I work with and create sacred mandalas to heal the land. As I say, over the years, I've become very adept at spirit release. And that what that's doing is it's lifting the trauma field from Mother Earth. And I've worked all over the world remotely. Obviously, prior to 2020, I traveled a lot. I did all my work in person. But since 2020, I've found ways in which it works online. So I have that as an option. And I periodically offer short five-week courses. I've got one that starts this Thursday, actually, called Venus, the Rose and the Path of Peace, which will be working with that, with the wound patterns up through the body. And I've also got a six-month program that starts at summer solstice to winter solstice, which is a certificated mandalas of love journey of discovery. Really, it's a journey home to self, but it's also giving the tools to be able to do this work for others, to create sacred mandalas of love for others, and to be able to read the energy of the roses and use the roses as medicine for the heart.
I love it. I love it. Oh, thank
you
so much. Yes, it's so many different ways to connect with you and the roses. Minimal, I mean, I just started with the Rose Dragon deck because I thought I'm just going to start somewhere. So to feel into what you feel called to, but it is definitely a journey that I'm enjoying. And I've been about a month or two. And it's powerful. So I would like to support people in reaching out to you in whatever way. And
thank you.
I'm so glad we connected and just had this time. I feel very honored to have sat with you and just created the space for this message to come through.
It's, you know, I think it is such a unique, well, we've all had unique journeys, but it's another facet of what's possible for us in this time. I also have rose oil on my site, some Egyptian rose oil.
Well, it has been a beautiful time. I appreciate every moment of it. Thank you for being here. And is there, we'll put the website in the show notes so that they can reach you there.
Thank you.
And any parting message for our guests before we end?
No, other than to just keep remembering, just take a few nice, easy breaths in and out and come home to your body. Bring yourself present wherever the mind's taken you. Just come back to the breath and present. And remember to stop and smell the roses. You know, we are the center of a mandala of love. And our families, our birth families, are a mandala of love, and our soul families are a mandala of love. And know that we are held and loved.
Thank you. We will end on that. We will end on that. Thank you again.
You're so welcome.
Thank you for being a part of the Transformative Harmonics podcast. If this discussion resonated with you, please subscribe, share the episode, or write a review. This helps to support the expanding community around embodiment, sound, and conscious living. You can visit Transformative Harmonics at paulascatoloni.com to find out more about my work, forthcoming classes, and the Transformative Harmonics Academy. You can also reach out and connect with me on Instagram. My handle is at paulascatoloni. I write regularly on Substack at Signature Frequency Living. Until next time, take good care, and thank you for being part of the journey.